Hello and welcome to Highway to Growth. I am Susan and together with my colleague Nida, we are thrilled to welcome today's extraordinary guest, Timo Spitzer. Head of Legal for the DACH region at a major European bank, Harvard author, adjunct professor and of course also a well-known keynote speaker. We have invited Timo to discuss a topic that he's already passionately fighting for throughout most of his career. The importance of integrity in leadership and why integrity is paramount to achieve a sustainably thriving company. Given the number of corporate scandals in the recent years, we are discussing with Timo if and why the corporate world is currently facing a crisis of trust and how companies can recover from that in order to regain a good reputation and of course the trust of their stakeholders. We've also talked about the financial upsides of an integer and sustainable leadership style and how ESG compliance is a good example for how moral standards and integrity can actually be monetized. Timo not only shares with us his deep conviction that the core of true leadership is care, he also firmly believes that in order to build a long-term success, a company needs to implement a solid value system top-down and, of course, also have to live by it. In particular, when it comes to daily business decisions, but also the short and long-term HR and hiring strategy. And of course, since we are both lawyers, we have also asked Timo what advisors need to bring to the table to be mandated by him and become part of his team. And his response might come a little bit as a surprise to you. So without further ado, let's welcome our astonishing guest, Timo Spitzer.
Welcome Timo Spitzer, General Counsel and Head of Legal of a globally active European bank. Timo, we are very proud to have you on High Road to Growth today. We will talk about your approach to a humane leadership and a very modern way of interpreting leadership or good leadership. But before we do so, we would like to give our listeners a small introduction about your projects you are working on or the projects you're gifting your time that you have available next to your job as head of legal. So how we came across your knowledge is that Susan and I read an article published by Harvard Business Law Review with the following title, The Importance of Human Leadership with Integrity in a Highly Regulated and Tech-Reliant Corporate Environment. And the interesting thing is that that article has been published after you gave, I think, one or it was maybe already your second speech at Harvard Law, and it was so popular that Harvard Business Law Review decided to publish a corresponding article of your speech. So besides that, you also give keynote speeches at different legal conferences, such as by the Academy of European Law or the International Bar Association. And you also are a guest lecturer at different universities, such as Harvard and Fordham Law School. Timo, thank you for sharing your time today with us. And you have a very modern and unique understanding of the role of a general counsel or head of legal. You see your role as head of legal as an integral part of senior management, which is extremely relevant as only a strong and independent leader can successfully tackle all the challenges of today's corporate realities. You embody the modern and truly global counsel who, in addition to serving his internal clients, acts as a positive force within society at large. Timo, what kind of projects are you currently working on and dedicating your time to?
Many thanks, Nida. It's a great pleasure to be here also with you, Susan. Thank you very much for the invitation. First of all, I would say that I'm a head of legal. You know, some people may use these terms in parallel, general counsel and head of legal, but my official title is head of legal. I cover the multinational corporates out of several jurisdictions and their activities in corporate and investment banking. But you were asking for my side activities more than that. And apart from being a general counsel, I am also a board member and adjunct professor at the Institute for Law and Finance at Goethe University in Frankfurt, where I teach, on the laws of international trade and export finance since 2018. And also, I am a board member and advisory board member of DIRU, the German Institute for Legal Departments and Corporate Lawyers. I'm also an advisory board member of several publications, and I like to give lectures from time to time at different law schools, such as Harvard and Fordham Law School, and to participate in various conferences to meet other general counsel and heads of legal.
Great, thank you so much. That's really impressive. And what's also impressive is that you've already received multiple awards, not only for your career so far, but also for the values you stand for. And do you think that's a sign that soft skills in a modern economy became more important recently? Or could it be a sign that the world is finally ready to shift its focus from a return-driven perspective to more sustainability and to a more value-driven world? Do you think that's might be the case?
Thank you, Susan. I sincerely hope so. I think that at the bottom of any sustainability lies integrity. And integrity I see as, formal rules, legal or commercial, but also ethics, that means voluntary standards, ideally on a global uniform basis, but also employee values such as honesty, fairness, trustworthiness, commitment to inclusion and candor, and also reliability. So the combination of all of these things constitutes integrity. And I think that integrity is paramount to create trust, which is the basis of any meaningful relationship. And therefore, I believe that at the bottom of true sustainability lies integrity. If we act with integrity, we can win back some of the public trust which has been lost over the years by many corporates. And we really need to show that, we are decent business partners with integrity, that you are actually inclined to do business and have a relationship with. So I would say that integrity is paramount in this respect.
Timo, that is a really passionate statement you just made for integrity in leadership. And we are also of the opinion that it is really important for a leader to have integrity and all those values you just mentioned, such as honesty, trust and reliability, also for an employee to thrive in its own workspace and to give its best for the company. You just showed us that you really defend those values despite your huge success in your career. Why is that topic so important to you, and what does leadership mean to you? Why did you become such an expert in this field?
Well, I think, I have the great pleasure to work for an amazing boss at Santander Group. I will not discuss her attributes and details because she doesn't like me to speak in public about her. So I will totally accept that. But in essence, I have somebody who backs me up fully and who is really a great leader who is inspiring others. And I think that is really the purpose of a leader, to help others grow and to make them great leaders themselves. And I also dedicated my time in learning a lot from other general counsel who have made their mark, had a fantastic career. A standout example for a global general counsel who is an inspiration to the whole community is Benjamin W. Heinemann Jr., who was the general counsel of General Electric for 18 years, first under someone by name, Jack Welch, and then Jeff Immelt. And basically, Ben has defined the mission of the corporation, infusing high performance, that means the sustained provision of great goods and services with high integrity, that what I have just explained, compliance with laws, ethics and values, and also sound risk management, because any CEO doesn't need to just assume risk. He also needs to manage risk and take risks. And as I also had the pleasure of lecturing several times at Harvard Law School, I could meet Ben in person there at the Charles Hotel in Cambridge. It was really a great honor for me, and we are in contact to this date. I recently mentioned him as an inspiration in an interview that the Spanish publication Líder Legal did with me, and he was also pleased to see that. And I really learned a lot from him. He has a lot of podcasts also and interviews which are available on YouTube. And for me, it was a great inspiration that such a such a famous general counsel who had such a remit on a global level took the time to meet with me at Harvard. That was really a great moment.
Well, it's really interesting. Thank you. And I think you mentioned it a couple of times. Integrity is a value that's also paramount for us. And when we look back at the past months and also years, there were a couple of really huge scandals in the market involving like big corporates or maybe also strategic or our advisors, maybe also legal advisors and financial advisors and so on. And the way we are perceiving it is that most of such scandals were driven by the intention of fast and big growth, regardless of any losses. And against this background, do you think, and I think I've heard you saying something like this, do you think we are currently facing a crisis of trust in the general market? And if you think that, how can this trust be rebuilt? And is integrity a cornerstone, or what would be the strategy to rebuild a general trust in the market from a stakeholder perspective?
I think that we have a crisis of leadership. So, you know, we need to differentiate between a leader and a manager first. I asked this question at the General Counsel conference in Alicante a couple of years ago. And it was a question that I asked the entry keynote speaker just to keep the ball going. And he basically said, "What a stupid question. You can read that in a book." And I thought, hey, it's not a stupid question at all. Not because I asked it, because I really feel passionately about it. A leader is, in essence, somebody who inspires you, who makes you go, who makes you happy with your work, that you have a great inspiration by the work that you do. And at the end of the day, you feel fulfilled by the work that you did. This is a leader, somebody you want to follow. Somebody you want to follow. Anybody can be a leader. It doesn't need to be someone with a fancy title. The one to the left of you can inspire you, the one to the right of you. And so this is someone you want to follow. And we have a clear lack in such inspiring persons in the modern business, in my view. What we have plenty of is the old manager model of command and control, which you can also see in the school system. You know, somebody tells you to do your homework and you ask, why should I do it? And then the manager says, because I said so. You know, sometimes people make you jump through certain hoops just because they have power over you. If you don't obey with what they say, it will have labor law consequences for you. But you're not happy with that, and you are not inspired. And ultimately, you may be suffering in a way due to that. So if we have strong leaders whom we want to follow, who lead with integrity, and I do see that as a cornerstone, I do see that as a foundation, then we can create a true sustainability, because, you know, we don't care only for the shareholder, but for the wider group, including the shareholder, but also the employees, creditors, suppliers, up until the wider environment in which a corporation operates. And I see many companies who are introducing ESG policies into their operations. This is especially demanded by the next generation of leaders. Time will tell what will happen with that. And I do think we need strong leaders to enable this transition towards a more sustainable business model and also have happy employees at the end of the day, because a corporation is after all just as good as the employees that work for it.
I can truly agree with what you just said, and for me, between the lines, I understood also that corporate culture is very important for sustainable leadership style. And you said in one of your Harvard speeches that only the key leaders of a corporation, such as the CEO, can set the overall culture of a firm. And it would be interesting to know what you mean by that statement, and if an overall corporate culture can be aligned with a personal leadership style. For example, do you think that a team leader can adapt his or her own leadership style, rather, for example, being rather competent oriented than hierarchical? And would that be limited by, for example, reporting lines in a legal regulated world, especially in bank sector or publicly listed companies?
I think that, the CEO needs to be the person whom you want to follow, needs to be somebody inspirational, needs to be somebody who in the boardroom can make the elephant dance. If he is not that charismatic figure, and if he acts not with corporate integrity, but for instance, with corporate hypocrisy, holding a big meeting about ESG and other issues and then making jokes about compliance and other stuff. And if you have such a CEO, that message would travel around the organization just as fast, faster than, if you have somebody who is leading with authenticity. And I don't think that hierarchy is the solution to all answers. I believe in the model of a servant leader who is basically providing the employees with everything they need to do to do the job done, to get the job done. Somebody who was very inspiring in that sense, was Pep Guardiola when he was from still with FC Barcelona Football Club, because he won almost all the competitions that he entered, not the games, but the competitions. And if you look at his team, the leader of the team was not Messi, who was probably the best player. It was Carles Puyol that was somebody who has these leadership attributes, who could hold the team together, who could inspire the team. And Guardiola, in this time, he basically told the team, I don't expect you to win titles or trophies. The only thing that I want you to do is to give it all that you've got. And if you have given it all you got and we lose, then I will defend you. And what better can you say to a human organization or to employees who human after all, that they need to do their personal best and not demand something which is, above and beyond their capabilities. If there is this feeling of trust between the team leader and his team, especially in a time of mobile working, when you can't see the people in person again, then it really is shown the quality of a team. So I think in an organization, the CEO would be the key person to drive these values down in the organization, and he must make very clear to the team leaders that they can miss on the numbers and survive, but they can never miss on integrity. And that also includes an omission. So not just a commission to do something wrong, but also an omission to fail to create a culture of compliance you know, I think you need a CEO who is acting in a way as the chief compliance officer. That means he or she influences how people think, feel, and behave on a daily basis and drives integrity deep down in the organization. The CEO must reemphasize the mission of the corporation, that is the fusion of high performance with high integrity and sound risk management. And he must not follow the path of corporate hypocrisy. That means he must act with authenticity at all times, treat every meeting as if it would be a public meeting, and make it very clear that, you know, you can even miss performance goals if they are associated to numbers, reaching the numbers, and you can still maintain your position within the corporation. But what you must not do is miss on integrity. That means break integrity. And if you do so, that must have severe consequences for those who did it, who committed an act, a commission, but also who knew it and had done nothing about it. That's an omission. So both a commission and an omission for a breach of integrity must not be tolerated. And if the public knows that you are a company acting with integrity, then you will be a desirable business partner for them. They will trust you and they will buy your products and request your services. That's what I mean with fusing high performance, that is the provision of excellent services and the creation of excellent goods, with high integrity, the compliance with laws, ethics, and values. And all that also needs to be underlined with a sound risk management. That means the CEO must not only take risk, but he must manage it, balance it. And this is a huge task for the CEO. And this makes it very complicated to find the right person for the CEO. But in my view, if the CEO accepts the general counsel or the head of legal as a partner, but also as a guardian to protect the corporation, the head of legal or the general counsel can support the CEO in that role of fusing high performance with high integrity and sound risk management.
There are a couple of really, really important points here. First, that you, as a CEO or the leader of a company, you need to live the values that will be crucial and paramount for the company, and you have to expect it from your colleagues as well. And also you shouldn't live any tolerance with respect to any misbehavior, or I don't want to say illegal behavior, but also unethical behavior as well, right? And I think that often gets tolerated by the management or by the leadership level, which I think is not acceptable at all. And I don't know if you were, let's say, if you were to join a company as a leader or a CEO after they were facing a public crisis in trust and integrity, how were you to introduce a new set of values and to create a new sort of, a new corporate culture and to establish that? Because when I always think about it, the way I would do it is to define the values of the company and then manifest them in some sort of ethical codex. You know what I mean? For example, with a couple of colleagues from other firms, like an insolvency administrator, and great colleagues also from certain strategic advisors who are very well known, we were establishing sort of a working group. We are meeting a couple of times a year and discussing certain cases, but also general values that we are facing, maybe also missing in our companies. And what we were saying when we founded this group was that we want to have some sort of code of conduct, how we behave towards people and our colleagues, and also, of course, our clients, and how we manage and also respect the health of ourselves and also the health of ours when it comes to working hours, for example. So what do you think, how would you introduce and make transparent a new and important set of values to a company to really make sure that the people are living it?
I think to regain public trust for past wrongdoings, you need at first to apologize if that didn't happen to the public, you need to make a statement, you know, that there have been wrongdoings. You have to accept blame. You know, if people blame you, you have to accept that, because this is a fact of an apology. You know, if somebody did something wrong to you, this person apologizes to you, and it's a genuine apology. You know, we need to install people with the right mindset who can create this culture of integrity or sustainability in the corporation. And we need to have the right people to support him or her. That means through people hiring or firing, we need to make very clear that this is what the corporation wants, you know. And a code of conduct is a nice thing. But at the end of the day, I think most companies have a code of conduct. And these values don't mean anything if they are not lived and breathed on a daily basis. You spoke about not only laws, but also ethics being relevant. I totally agree. I believe you must have a global code of ethics on a uniform global code of ethics these days, not because you have to follow it as a matter of law, but because you want to follow it. You see, the law can change over time. You know, the law is very complex. We get an increasing amount of regulation. It's very hard to foresee all scenarios. And that's why you need to be away from the gray line to illegality with some distance. You know, and values help you with that. In the end, if you would treat others like you wish to be treated, that would already be a start. And if something sounds bad for others, then it's probably something that you shouldn't do. So you really need to lose these profit-focused thinking. Profit-oriented thinking is great, is important, but profits can only be derivative, you know. The financial compensation can be derivative only for great performance. I was recently asked, since you mentioned it in relation to the awards, how do you get awards? Or and I would essentially say, you know, if you do something that somebody thinks is award worthy, you will get an award. But if you're just out there and screaming, I want an award, people will not take notice of that, in my view. The same view of getting rich, but you are in great company because I was at the Continental Europe conference in the UK of a provider. And there was the managing partner of a law firm giving a speech, and he basically said that the mission of a law firm is to make money. And I was shocked, you know. At least I had expected, you know, the mission of the law firm is to help our clients reach their performance goals and get rich in the process. That is what I would have expected. But what I would have liked is we help our clients reach their transactional goals and do so in a legally and ethically compliant manner and get rich in the process. So I think if you have such a person as a law firm leader who makes it very clear that this is the only way the culture of a law firm is going forward, then I think that this may have positive impacts on the day-to-day of everyone in the law firm and also in corporations. You need to make it very clear that this is what the leaders want, that they want everyone to act in line with laws, ethics, and values at all times, and that there can be no exceptions, because otherwise you have a Swiss cheese model and you will lose credibility, especially in a global environment. You know, if you do something in that country and if you do other things in another country, it may hurt your credibility because the people see you as one brand and they don't differentiate between countries. So you need to have, in my view, a global code of ethics and adhere to that in your daily decisions.
You said some very important points here, many important points. And one that struck me was that you said a company and the CEO should apologize for unethical behavior or mistakes that might have happened to regain the trust in the public eye, but also within the firm itself towards other stakeholders like employees or clients and customers. And recently, Angela Merkel, she did that. She apologized in public for her COVID politics. And that was really brave. That was brave because nobody before her did that in politics. And it is a really rare thing to be that open and vulnerable to admit in the public that you made a mistake of being a sustainable leader.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, capitalism is the best economic system there is. But at the core of capitalism, there lie these pressures for corruption, you know, making the numbers. And this is getting increasingly complex, you know, to reach the numbers because of global competition. The markets are volatile. Things happen, crises happen. Now we have the COVID crisis. So people may be inclined, if they are only measured by performance goals and reaching performance goals in terms of reaching numbers, to cheat, you know, and you must make it very clear that this is a behavior that will not be tolerated. So I would have thought that this leadership style, where you assume responsibility, either for your own responsibility, you know, if you yourself did something wrong, but also for the responsibility of other people, you know, if a CEO has left a company because of a scandal, or a managing partner had to step down from a law firm, and somebody new needs to step in, he needs to apologize as well to the people who have suffered the consequences of this scandal, because, you know, people perceive the corporation and the law firm as one. So at the end of the day, I think it's very important that you apologize. And I'm actually quite concerned that this is seen as such a novelty. You know, if you're a little kid and you broke something, and then if you apologize then to your parents, then probably the punishment will be less severe, or they may even hug you and explain to you why you shouldn't do that. But company leaders are not little children, you know. So in that respect, of course, they need to assume responsibility in that sense, and also show that there is a change going forward, to make it very clear that they want to act the entire corporation in line with integrity and care not only for the shareholders, but for all stakeholders that are affected by the dealings of the corporation. That's very important. And trust, once it's lost, is very hard to rebuild. You know, it is better not to lose trust at all, you know, being open and transparent with each other, telling the truth and basically talking more to each other than talking about each other. Because sometimes it's not the problem which is the issue, but what people make of the problem. And that then turns into a snowball effect and makes the repercussions even larger. So yes, we need leaders who can apologize for mistakes, whether these are their mistakes or mistakes of other people, and try to rebuild trust by showing that it is different, not only on paper by having a code of conduct or something like that, but by living and breathing it on a daily basis into everything that they do and that the entire corporation does. Only then trust can be rebuilt. And it's a long process. It takes time. But people need to see that key leaders really make an effort in the restoration of trust.
I totally agree. And I must admit that I also have to agree with Neda. To me, it's also a novelty that leadership figure is apologizing for a mistake. regardless as to whether it has been an actual mistake or not. But when I think back to all the, I keep calling it scandals, you know what I mean, to all those scandals, I can't recall any leader apologizing for what happened, whether they were more like neutralizing what happened by explaining the root causes or something like that. But I've never heard, as you said, or called it a genuine apology or an honestly meant apology. And I think that's very sad. And I totally agree with you that this has to change in the future. I think that's the first step for any rehabilitation of trust that needs to be done before you go back to business. I totally agree. And the other thing that you said, what was quite funny to me, that a lawyer or a partner said, like, the goal of being a lawyer is to make money. I've heard this too, actually. I think the question in my case was, what's the purpose of being a lawyer of your law firm? And the answer was as well, of course, making money. And that's just the output, as you said it, like the side effect, but it never can be the actual purpose. And I think that all comes down to the one root cause, that people are only following fast growth perspective, right? They just want to have proceeds and money very soon without thinking about the sustainability. And I think you touched base on that in your International In-House Counsel Journal article a couple of times, how important sustainability is for a good corporate culture. And I am wondering, you need to shift your mindset to a long-term strategy. That's what I consider paramount. But I wonder why it is so hard for companies to pursue this strategy. Is it like some sort of commercial peer pressure, or what do you think?
I think it is the well-established model of shareholder primacy, and also the old leadership or management, better said, schooling of command and control, which is still in the minds of many people. You see, many people were promoted to a management level because they were technically good at the job that they did, but then they had responsibility for other people, and sometimes they don't have really an idea how to lead other people. They know technically well what they should do. That's why people did promote them, but they don't actually know how to inspire others on a daily basis. And that's why I used this example of FC Barcelona, when they had this dream team, when Carles Puyol was the captain. He wasn't the best player, but he was the best leader, and he could keep the team together, and it had a very great success in almost all of the competition that this team entered. And I think that it really comes down to the leadership. What are we trying to do? Of course, we need to do everything with high performance. We need to create great goods and provide outstanding services. But this is only one thing of the equation, because we also must do it in line with high integrity, and then backed with sound risk management. So if you do everything in line with these elements, you can create a true corporate culture of sustainable success. Also, I think that short-term profit maximization cannot be the only goal, because if you basically do something very drastically, it won't last. It may make you rich, but it may have other people suffer in the process, and therefore you can't go about your business by having a crash and burn mentality. At the end of the day, you should think first what an impact your actions have on the environment you're dealing with, and then find a solution which is trying to kind of take into account all stakeholders that are actually concerned. As of now, the corporate law is largely oriented towards the shareholder. So I think that fundamental changes in corporate laws are necessary. to bring about more stakeholder integration as a matter of law. And this may take time, although it's already been done in certain areas, and we have corporate governance codices all over the world, but they have one thing in common, and this is that they are unbinding in nature. And this is why I think it's really another method if the general counsel or head of legal of a corporation doesn't only act as a service partner to the business, that is a solution provider. We need to do many things. First of all, we are technical legal experts, but we also trusted advisors, legal business leaders, and above all, decent human beings. But we also need to take into account and fulfill our guardian role. Many corporate scandals, in my view, happen due to bad business judgment and bad business decisions. And oftentimes, I would say, the lawyers weren't even in the room when these decisions have been made. So it's the mission of the general counsel to be introduced into this management decision making on a strategic level. And you can do that by being a strategic partner to the business, helping the business realize their transactional goals with their customers in a legally, ethically compliant manner, and basically helping them go get a sustainable commercial success. And then they will respect you even more. So then you can fulfill your true role as a guardian of the corporation. You see, a head of legal or general counsel is ultimately responsible towards the entire corporation. He's not responsible only towards the CEO or to individual board members. He is responsible for the entire corporation, but he can only fulfill this role if he is part of a top management of a corporation, and then he has the necessary gravitas to actually influence business decision making towards achieving further sustainability. So I would say that you need strong and inspiring leaders for the CEO function. And these strong, inspiring leaders who understand themselves also as chief culture officer, that is to influence how people think, feel, and behave in this corporation. And they need to work closely together with the general counsel. And a CEO needs to allocate public trust towards the general counsel to know that he is backing the general counsel up. If a general counsel doesn't enjoy the confidence of a CEO, his or her life may be terrible, because the general counsel need to fear of not getting more benefits, losing existing benefits. In-house lawyers may fear not being promoted. They may fear that their legal and compliance assessments are being tampered with. And if this is due to business pressure, and I think if that would happen, you need to leave the company, because you should never compromise and breach your integrity for anyone. And in your own interest, I think if you see that the corporate culture is like that, and you won't be able to change it, then you should leave the corporation, notwithstanding it's paying you well. But in the end of your day, you will make the right choice. You need to be able to look every day in the mirror and be happy with you and what you do on this planet.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said. Again, many important points you touched on. And I would say that even the legal background is shifting more from merely looking at a shareholder value to a stakeholder-based management. So, for example, you also mentioned the Corporate Governance Codex, which many jurisdictions have adapted, and it's a comply or explain mechanism. So that only applies to publicly listed companies, but At the same time, we have the business judgment rule, where decision of managers must also be weighted in a long-term perspective, and not only short-term proceeds are relevant for such decisions. And one aspect for also privately held companies and also publicly listed companies is, I think, that more and more investors are looking at the social impact a company provides. And we have ESG criteria. So these are criteria for environment, social, and governance aspects of a company. And I think it's very valuable that investors are more and more looking to those criteria, not only for our environment to be more sustainable for our kids in the future, etc., but also because the social aspect includes leadership and includes integrity and ethical behavior towards the employees. So these code of ethics some companies do implement get more and more important also for the numbers as the companies are looking for investors. Might need to show a good ESG compliance system in order to get that capital round financed and get that investment. And hence, I would say that being ESG compliant does also show its effects in performance and the numbers, which are really important for many investors still. So still also some managers follow the rule, business comes before integrity, instead of, as we all three would sign, integrity comes before the business, but still show that being compliant and being ethical and having integrity as the whole, as a whole firm, does monetize. Would you also agree with that statement, or what is your opinion on this?
Absolutely. Many thanks. I think I put it in the IICJ article, which you refer to, that corporate leaders may comply with ESG principles to monetize being good, actually. So ESG compliance is not driven by moral philosophy, but by hard financial necessity. And I have given a presentation at the ERA Academy of European Law the last week, which is also freely available on my LinkedIn profile, that basically I've drawn a inverse pyramid of ESG compliance. And I have said it would be great if all leaders would comply with ESG principles due to an intrinsic motivation of corporate leadership. That means they are true believers in the value of ESG, but also leaders may comply with it because of direct benefits that ESG brings about, such as a boost in employee motivation, attracting better talent, an enhanced return on investment, a cost reduction, or even if it's to acquire more government and community funding. And also ESG can be a source of indirect value. You can achieve increased customer loyalty, increased revenues, increased company valuations, better performance compared to industry peers, less market volatility, and so on and so forth. So I think that at the end of the day, it is in everyone's genuine interest, to achieve ESG compliance. And the CEO of Deutsche Börse, Theodor Weimer, has just said in a statement that within 10 years, he thinks that all relevant DAX corporations will be following a path of sustainability. And this is, I think, very important to highlight, that this is something which has true financial positive effects. And another side effect is also, if you do something good, is you may even avoid future regulation. I have said in an article that I wrote for Harvard Business Law Review, which is also freely available under my LinkedIn profile, that basically there can never be a perfect regulatory system. That means a regulatory system which is so good so all-encompassing that no one ever needs to be good again. And, you know, I'm saying this because even before COVID, I said you never know if and when the next crisis hits. You know, we can speculate it, but we don't know for sure. And we may have a great amount of regulation in one area, which has been very necessary after the bad business judgment decisions of the 2008 financial crisis. But at the end of the day, we don't know for sure. And that's why we need to retain and train our human ability to make good moral judgment calls. It's like training these on a daily basis. Because, you know, now in COVID, you may have seen you did less sports, then your muscles suffered, your muscles have shrunk. The same thing, I would argue, happens with sound decision making. If you don't make good and valued and, you know, balanced decisions, sustainable decisions on a regular basis, you will lose this ability. You will lose the ability to make moral judgment calls. And that's why I think, you know, in the interest of preventing overreaching amount of regulation, which could potentially impair your ability to do business, you need to do the right thing, in my view, out of an intrinsic motivation to prevent regulation to that extent and do the right thing, not because you have to do it, but because you want to do it and to create a better world for all of us in doing so. Because at the end of the day, you won't be able to take your financial gains into the next life. The pharaohs of Egypt have tried that, and all that happened was that they got robbed, you know, when their graves got exploded. So you really need to think about the consequences of your actions first before taking them.
I love your approach that you're saying you have to train it. It sounds maybe a bit odd at first glance, but I think you're totally right. You need to train it because obviously, the corporate world lost its perspective and its sense of goodness when it comes to this decision-making process, as it's my impression of what's going on, I think. And also, as you said, if there's no intrinsic motivation, I think there should be, but sometimes it's lacking of that. That's what I'm sure of. At least you, as Nita said, would have to see that there are other perks to acting ethical and to have a sound and good ESG system, which is the monetization of your values. And I think even that's often overlooked. And it's so strange because if we're talking about ethical behavior, people often look at us like we are talking about witchcraft. And obviously that's not the case. And also, I mean, sure, if you tell someone you need to behave ethically correct, then they are saying, yeah, of course we do. But also, as you mentioned earlier in our interview, it's often just put in the paper, but no one's acting on it. So I think that's a very important point. And also, in my view, that's really important when it comes to your HR strategy, right? Because, for example, recent studies showed that over 50% of Gen Z workers said that they would not work for a company whose values they are not sharing. And I think that's a really important factor to take into consideration for your future strategy, because obviously you can only attract talent, in particular young talent, if you can offer them something. As you said, it's not the salary anymore that's the key factor for people to try to work with you, but also your values and what you're projecting into the external world. And I also think, and that's something I'm sometimes missing in the legal world, this should be more taken into consideration when it comes to promoting people. Because it's not only hard KPIs like the revenues they are bringing or the utilization, but also soft factors that should be equally relevant in my view. I would be very curious, and I'm wondering what's your perspective on this. How can you implement and introduce soft skill factors into the hiring and promoting process?
Thank you, Susan. It's a great question, and I absolutely do agree. You know, if you want to find out whether a company truly believes in integrity and sustainability and the long term, and that ethical behavior is important, just look at the people that are promoted within the corporation. You know, the people who are promoted, who get positions of management and leadership, you can clearly see if these are the actually paragons and guardians of ethical behavior, or are these people who rather display and broadcast a different approach. So you can judge a company very well by the people who are actually promoted to leadership positions within the corporation and for what they are promoted to leadership positions. So I think at the end of the day, you know, the CEO must make it clear in cooperation with HR, of course, that, you know, the reason or the targets for variable compensation are not based on reaching the numbers alone, but on reaching the numbers in line with law, ethics, and values. Also doing pro bono work. You know, we are so blessed as external and in-house counsel. We had had such a great education, and we must give back to society. You know, I teach since 2018 at the Institute for Law and Finance in Frankfurt. I also teach at other schools, not as a regular, but I do all of that on an unpaid basis, because I want to help the future generation of leaders to grow up with the right values and strong values. And you can only create that if you create the right mindset of sustainability. At the end of the day, you need to ask yourself, what do you want to be remembered for? You know, do you want to be remembered for somebody who was just chasing the quick buck to buy stuff that you don't need, to impress people that you don't like? Or do you want to create something better for society as a whole? That doesn't mean that you need to help old ladies over the street every day or other things. You can, of course, do that if you want. But if you take care to the persons to the left of you and to the right of you, and if everybody does that, then I think this system would be much better than it is actually. You know, before COVID, already we had a big problem of isolation. You know, we have many people, the world population is higher than ever, yet people feel more isolated and more apart from each other. And I think rather than focusing only on ourselves in our individual gains, we need to reach out and help others, listen to their concerns, truly listen, you know, when they have something to say. For instance, if you reach out to HR with an issue, they should really take it seriously, because otherwise you wouldn't have approached them at all, and work on this together with you, and involve other people as necessary. And this is very important, and that's why you need people in key leadership positions in the corporation who understand that, because if that doesn't happen, we will just feel increasingly frustrated with the corporate world, and we will lose all motivation and passion for our work. You know, there is nothing worse than a manager who just doesn't get it, that, you know, he is actually there to provide you with what you need on a daily basis to do your job. I mean, real leaders or real managers have such an easy life, you know, because the only thing they really need to do is enable the people at the front to do their job with the best equipment and the equipment they actually need. You know, if they instead micromanage them or make their lives increasingly difficult, this is terrible. You know, managers should be there kind of as a backup on a daily basis for the people at the front, actually. You know, whenever they have problems, whenever they have concerns, they can reach out to them, and then they should work it out like that. And this is something which should be taken into account in the compensation, you know, of managers. We already have a kind of wellness questionnaires and things like that, but these should be much higher, affecting the compensation of key leaders, because at the end of the day, leaders in corporations are very well compensated, and they that should also take into account the way their staff feels on a daily basis.
We talked a lot now about integrity and values within a firm, and it is very important, as we said, within a firm for the CEO and the employees and even all the stakeholders, including maybe even including the shareholders, as we talked about ESG criteria, to identify with the values of the firm in a long-term perspective. And what would be of interest for us would now be, would you apply those criteria also when mandating external firms, such as consulting firms or even law firms? Those are mandates that require a lot of specialized knowledge, for example, in the sector of banks where you work in. And so the pool from which you could choose those advisors is indeed big, but sometimes it might be hard to decide which firm or even which partner and team would be the best fit for you as a company. So would you say when taking that decision, you also look at the integrity and values of those advisors you would hire? And is there kind of a thumb rule you say that specialized knowledge would weigh in, for example, let's say, I don't know, 60 or 70% and personal connection and the values you want them to stand by to be aligned with the values of the company you work in and you also show to the public weighs in, I don't know, 40 or 30%? Or would you say that is not of importance at all, as they are only external firms and the most important for you would be that they have the specialized knowledge you are asking them to provide to you?
Thank you, Nida. That's a very important question, and I know exactly where you're coming from. I personally have the ability to work with whoever I want, as long as they, for instance, are not totally out of line with their fee caps or kind of billing in engagement. So you can't send me an invoice, 1 million with a one line statement for services rendered. But I need to be able to think that I can trust the persons I work with. I need to be able to think that the person I'm working with is a in parenthesis, good human being. So I would never mandate somebody who is publicly involved in any kind of scandals. I would never mandate anyone who is behaving negatively vis-a-vis the environment, who is going, who is badly behaving towards his subordinates. These are all criteria which are, of course, important for the mandating decision. Ultimately, you know, heads of legal or general counsel need to be able to deal with sometimes tough business leaders on a daily basis who need to support their clients, of course, who in turn can be tough towards them. This is the way of the world, and we need to be able to draw on the assistance of advisors who can help us, help the business leaders reach their performance goals. But, you know, I have worked with people who have made mistakes before, and I still work with them. You know, I have very long working relationships with law firms, because at the end of the day, these mistakes didn't lead to us losing money in the end. And even if we would have lost money, then this can be regained. But once you lose trust, once you lose reputation, this is extremely hard to regain. So if somebody is behaving badly, thinking because he has reached a certain status and certain amount of wealth and he can now do whatever he wants, this doesn't work with me, because nobody is irreplaceable. And the good choice is that it is, as you say, a buyer's market. So of course, you know, we look closely whom we associate ourselves with, because after all, you are also judged by the company that you keep, and that's another incentive for everyone to show good behavior. Again, don't do to anyone else what you don't like to be done to you. I once was shocked very much, and I was having lunch with a major firm, and if the person now listens to your podcast, he will know who I mean, but I don't go into names. It was a major firm, and basically he wanted to call the waiter. And the way he was doing that is he was throwing willfully the fork on the ground, that it would make a noise. And the waiter would come there to pick it up. And I almost would have left immediately, but there was another female partner sitting with him, who I know for a long time. So I met this other guy the first time, and I didn't get up, I didn't leave, but I felt very repulsively. And of course, I did never work with this firm afterwards. Of course, you should not judge anyone by the actions of a single partner, of course, but why should we take the risk on working with somebody who has already in front of my eyes committed such an act? Who knows what happens after closed doors, how this person is treating his associates? And at the end of the day, you need to be very, very careful there. And I have great pleasure that, you know, I know a lot of lawyers all over the world, because our business is truly global. And the ones I met in person, I am very sure that they are also good human beings, if you would put it this way. So that they actually make the right judgment call, not because only otherwise they look bad in my eyes, but because they also believe it's the right thing to do. So it's not that I set certain criteria by myself, you need to hire XYZ women or something like that. The firms need to do that. They need to do that for themselves to have a truly sustainable workforce. But what I can say is that if I notice somebody behaving badly towards anyone else, towards the environment, and being involved in scandals, that would probably not be the first person that I would mandate for a matter in the future.
Thank you, Timo. I think that's wonderful and really nicely put. And I think that shows the integrity with which you are doing things. I think that's really impressive. Thank you for this insightful answer. Overall, it was a really, really interesting and inspiring interview. And at the end of each interview, we have only one question left, which we'd also love to ask you, of course. And this is what we normally ask our guests. Is there one final piece of advice that you would like to share with our listeners?
Absolutely. Many thanks, Susan. I hope a lot of juniors at the start of the career are listening to that. And what I would say is, don't try to carry the world on your shoulders, because, you know, life is short, but it's not that short. And, you know, everybody is an individual. You know, some people in a law firm will make partner, others won't, neither the persons who are made partner are happy with their life and everything. You know, you're maybe happy on the day that you're made partner, but then you see that the race really, really begins. So I would encourage everybody to think about what they want from life, what they want to achieve, and also what kind of legacy do they want to leave behind. And based on that, they should create their career. As I said before, it's not the richest man with the most money is not the richest man, but the one who has lived a fulfilled life, who can look every day into the mirror and who can sleep well at night. I think that person is much, much richer. So first, I think know yourself would be the first advice, and then to base your career on that. So this would be my advice.
Timo, thank you so much for your inspiring words about humane leadership with integrity. It was a pleasure for us talking to you, and it was so insightful and fun for us to listen to you and to see how passionate you are about this topic. And yes, we are delighted that you shared your time with us to talk about this.
And of course, also a big thank you from me, Timo. Thank you for this amazing interview. And of course, also a big thank you to all our listeners who are the inspiration for this podcast. We sincerely hope that you tune in to our next episode of High Road to Growth.